National Catholic Register. This is Register Radio, bringing light and clarity to the news and topics that affect your life.
Each year, as the 4th of July draws near, the U.S. bishops celebrate Religious Freedom Week. It's a time dedicated to prayer, reflection, and action, and this year, the focus was on issues such as church vandalism, blasphemy laws, and religious persecution around the globe. Bishop Kevin Rhodes, head of the U.S. Bishops' Committee for Religious Liberty, joins us to highlight the importance of this fundamental right and how it's being threatened. And then we turn to the unsung heroes of the American Revolution with Register staff writer Joseph Pronishin. Happy 4th of July. I'm Jeanette DeMello, Executive Director of the National Catholic Register and Catholic News Agency. I'm your host here on Register Radio, joined by my co-host Matthew Bunsen. Our guest, Bishop Kevin Rhodes of Fort Wayne, South Bend, Indiana, is joining us to talk about religious liberty, which is the focus of the committee he chairs for the U.S. Bishops' Conference. Welcome, Bishop Rhodes. Thank you for being with us today.
You're welcome, Jeanette. Great to be with you and Matthew.
So Religious Freedom Week began with the feast days of Saints Thomas More and John Fisher on June 22nd, and it concludes with the solemnity of Saints Peter and Paul on June 29th. So first of all, what great men to have as the patrons of this week of prayer, reflection, and action. And would you say, could you tell us why these saints serve as a model for religious freedom?
Yes, they were great martyrs for religious freedom. Of course, St. Thomas More stayed true to his conscience and refused to recognize or take the oath of supremacy, recognizing King Henry VIII as the head of the church. And that took great courage when so many, gave in to this and took the oath. St. Thomas More and the bishop, St. John Fisher, refused and stayed faithful to the teachings of Christ, and they gave their lives. So great way to begin Religious Freedom Week, and then, of course, ending with the feast which celebrates the martyrdom of the pillars of the church, Saints Peter and Paul, also oppressed by religious persecution, the persecution of Christians under the Emperor Nero, and both gave their lives in Rome. For the sake of Christ.
Absolutely. I think one of the things that's so remarkable, too, about ending on the solemnity of Saints Peter and Paul is just the apostolic zeal, of course, that they had in spreading the word. And that's Religious Freedom Week, right? Isn't only about our maybe threats right now, but it's also about getting out there and being true to church teaching.
Exactly. I mean, the missionary mandate of Jesus to go forth to all nations to spread the gospel, to teach all nations and to baptize, that's at the very heart of our calling. And, of course, we need the freedom to do so. And when we don't have that freedom, it's not only an injustice and affront to our human dignity, because, freedom of conscience, freedom of religion is part of human dignity, really, according to the Second Vatican Council. So sometimes we have to suffer when that freedom is denied. But we are called to have courage and with the strength of the Holy Spirit to bear witness to our faith, even if it's not popular or if we're criticized because of it, or as some people in the world today are actually imprisoned or even put to death. I think we have to keep in mind this is something very current. This isn't just something of the early centuries of the church where there were great persecutions, but today many Christians, many of our brothers and sisters in Christ are denied this basic right and are suffering for the sake of the faith.
Yeah, Your Excellency, the Dicastery for the Doctrine of the Faith recently released the document Dignitas Infinita, or Infinite Dignity, that reiterated church teaching on the dignity of the human person. From your standpoint, especially here we are with this theme of call to the fullness of dignity, how does that blurring and even oppression of an authentic understanding of human dignity, the human person, impact religious freedom?
You know, it's very interesting because when the Fathers of the Second Vatican Council were preparing the document on religious freedom, that's where they grounded it. They grounded it in the dignity of the human person, that every person has the right to search for the truth, to seek God, that this is innate, and this must be respected by government. And so I think that's really important to understand. We're not only defending our religious freedom, but the religious freedom of every person. No one should be coerced to believe or not to believe. You know, there's this innate dignity. It's a gift from God, and it's a cherished liberty. And our country has been known for its promotion of religious freedom and defense of religious freedom since the founding. So many of the early Americans came to this country. So many immigrants came here because of religious liberty. So it really is sad and tragic that some seek to diminish that liberty, religious liberty, becoming a bit eroded in a country that has been known from the beginning as a bastion of religious liberty.
Yeah, the bishops.
Of course, we aren't suffering like people internationally. People are really, there's terrible persecution. We can speak of a soft persecution in the United States. That might be even, I don't know that I even use the word persecution, but a certain denial of our freedom to, not so much freedom to worship, that's not being threatened, but the freedom to live our faith in our institutions, et cetera, to practice our faith in the public square when government seeks to deny or force us to do things that go against our beliefs. That's the threat today.
Yeah, and one of those concerns I know for you and especially your committee is drawing attention to this year's annual report that highlights attacks on houses of worship. Why has this become such a priority for the bishops?
Yes, we did I want to mention that the annual report on the state of religious liberty in the United States that we issued in January, this past January, it's our first time we've given an annual report, and we identify five main threats that largest threats to religious liberty that we foresaw for this year, for 2024. And the first was attacks on houses of worship, because especially after the Dobbs decision, for example, there was a lot of vandalism of Catholic churches and other pregnancy care centers, et cetera. But even beyond the Catholic Church, we point out how even synagogues or mosques are under danger of attack because of what's happening in the Israeli-Hamas conflict. So not only a growth in attacks on Catholic churches or Catholic charities facilities as targets for anti-immigrant action, we point out that, again, we're not just looking at ourselves. We're talking about religious freedom for all, and that includes Jews and Muslims as well.
Yeah, you mentioned the attacks on the vandalism that the U.S. bishops have tracked, and I think we've written about 320 instances that you guys have tracked of that's against Catholic entities. So it's a huge number, and that's not counting these anti-Semitic incidents that you're speaking of. So it's right that is an issue we should be very, very aware of. Bishop Rhodes, what else should we be aware of right now? I mean, this week of religious freedom is just about over, but it's not the only time we should be very aware of what's happening in our culture in the U.S., but across the globe. So what else are the bishops asking us to pay attention to?
Well, in our country, I would say there's two major, the threats right now that presently we're facing are really from the executive branch of the government. Mm-hmm. And we always have to look at the three branches. You know, we have to advocate with Congress, et cetera, for laws and statutes that protect religious liberty. But where the problems that we're seeing recently are really from the executive branch, executive orders. There were, I don't know, 8 or 9 executive orders in April and May that really threatened our religious liberty. Unbelievable, really. I'd like to highlight 2 of them because there are 2 that we're especially concentrating on these days. One is, you may have read about, is the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, the HHS, issued final regulations regarding the non-discrimination provisions of the Affordable Care Act, and known as Section 1557. And this is one of the 5 major threats that we saw coming. And of course, that threat did happen, because that regulation includes sexual orientation and gender identity in the definition of sex. So the final regulations generally require healthcare workers to perform gender transition procedures in the name of non-discrimination. That is very problematic. There are some religious liberty protections, but they're not enough. So we have these regulations which are really advancing a view of sex that the church cannot accept. We believe in the that, you know, we're created male and female. And, you know, trying to force people or doctors and healthcare workers to perform gender transition procedures, whether it be actual surgeries or, you know, hormone or puberty blockers, all those kinds of things. You know, our Catholic healthcare facilities, for example, will not do that. We can't. Right. It goes against our faith. And it also goes against good medicine, but that's a whole another matter. But Catholic hospitals, religious healthcare workers, being told that they have to perform these procedures that we believe are harmful, even procedures on children. So really, the federal government is trying to advance gender ideology.
Right.
And we will not accept that. So that's a major problem right now.
Yes,
and we need to really work on that. Yeah.
Absolutely. And I want to point we have just a minute left, so I really want to point to this upcoming conference that you will have. The U.S. CCB is sponsoring. It's a few months away, but it's September 9th, 2024. And it'll be in Washington, D.C., and it seems like a great place for people to learn a lot more. So I want to invite people to go to www.uscb.org/Religious Liberty Symposium 2024. You can learn a lot more about all the initiatives of religious liberty by the U.S. bishops on that website. Bishop Rhodes, it's been great to have you highlight some of these issues for us today.
Thank you. My pleasure. And thanks for all your support. I hope people become educated and of course, continue to pray.
Absolutely.
We need to pray for the defense of our religious freedom.
Amen to that. Up next, we'll talk to Joseph Pronichan about Catholic heroes of the American Revolution. And as we honor the birth of our nation, I invite you to watch EWTN News Nightly on July 4th, where you'll learn about early American Catholic influence. You're listening to Register Radio on EWTN. There's more when we return.
Let's return to Register Radio on EWTN.
Welcome back. I'm Jeanette DeMello, Executive Director of the National Catholic Register, and I'm joined by Matthew Bunsen. Catholics who know their American history might recall Charles Carroll as the lone Catholic to sign the Declaration of Independence on July 4th, 1776. But you may be surprised to learn there were many other American patriots who were Catholic. Register staff writer Joseph Pronishan wrote a great piece for the Register this Independence Day called July 4th History, A Catholic Patriots Were Unsung Heroes of American Revolution. You can find that at ncregister.com. And Joe is with us today. Hi, Joe.
Hi, Jeanette. How are you?
I'm doing very well. And you relied in your Register article on a historian we all know very well, Dr. Matthew Bunsen. So Dr. Matthew Bunsen and his mother, Margaret Bunsen, wrote the Encyclopedia of U.S. Catholic History, and in that encyclopedia, there were stories of these unsung Catholic heroes of the American Revolution days, and more, of course. So I'm going to let you two, Joe, I think you're a self-professed Catholic, a self-professed historian, right, of Catholic Catholic things in the U.S.
Well, certainly, and, right.
And Matthew, I'm going to let the two of you take this segment.
Yeah, absolutely. Joe, first, thank you for the article, and thank you for the plug in the article for the
Encyclopedia. You're welcome.
My late mom is smiling somewhere.
Oh, good, good. I'll give you a further plug by saying every Catholic should own this if they have any the tiniest bit of interest in history. It's fascinating that the entire book is. The things you bring out and the things you'll learn about the Catholics in the United States.
Yeah, it's a great story, and even now, after all these years, and there's been a lot of ink spilled on this topic, how few even American Catholics know about the legacy of the and the role of Catholics in founding the country and the American Revolution in particular. But I have to start with the question, do you have a particular favorite of this sort of gallery of Catholic stars?
You know, I actually do. It's Commodore John Barry.
Oh, yes.
I his story is so fascinating because I've not been a sailor myself, but his story, you know, just his physical appearance first. He was 6 feet 4 inches tall when the average height of guys in those days were 5'7", 5'8", at the most. So he really towered over his sailors and all, and other his friends and his enemies. But at the same time, he was seemed to be an extremely kind man. He began each day reading from the Bible for his whole crew, for example. So he was very much a obviously a practicing Catholic, a good Catholic, you know, just in that. But in addition, he was the first father. He was called the father of the American Navy, and he was the first one that Washington put in charge of a ship there. He was the first one to capture a British ship during the Revolution. He was the last one to win the last battle, sea battle of the American Revolution. And in between, he damaged tremendous damage to the British Navy and captured many, many ships, over 20. One trip back from France, he captured something like, I believe, nine ships, nine frigates, British frigates. And one time he was injured severely by cannon grape shot, and when his second in command was bobbling all over the place and it looked like the British were going to win, he went back up on deck and he not only won the battle, but and I just think this shows some of his Catholic upbringing and his Catholic character, because when he got the British admiral at that point to surrender, the British admiral came to him and handed him his sword, and Barry turned around and he handed the sword back to the British admiral, and he even said to him, "You have the use of my cabin until he goes." So he treated his enemies almost in a friendly manner like that, very respectful.
Yeah, and we tend to think of John Paul Jones as sort of the father of the U.S. Navy, right or wrong, but really Barry does hold a really important place in the history of the United States, and who else jumps to mind immediately?
Another one that jumps to mind is never so much known about her, but a woman that was in the Revolutionary War, a woman from Philadelphia named Mary Waters. She was Irish-American, as many of these Catholics were, and they tended to gravitate to Philadelphia because there was the only place that in the colonies that was not prejudiced toward their religion at that point. So she became a tireless worker during the Revolutionary War in the Army's hospitals. She worked for Dr. Benjamin Rush and received all kind of praise and accolades from him. Rush, as you remember, was one of the founding fathers, a signer of the Declaration of Independence. Mm-hmm. So to hear, you know, to get those kind of accolades from somebody so high, and to work for somebody so high in the group of people, the important people of the Revolutionary War, was certainly more than a feather in her nurse's cap there.
Exactly.
I don't know if you know anything more about her, but it seems to be very sketchy, about many details in her work, other than that,
Yeah, there doesn't seem to be an enormous amount of detail about her. I wanted to jump, though, to what I think we would all consider to be one of the great families in American Catholic history, and that's the Carrolls.
The Carroll family, yes. And, of course, John Carroll was the person over there, Charles Carroll, I'm sorry, of Carrolltown, was the most recognizable name over here because most people generally don't know that or think of him as a signer of the Declaration of Independence, but he was. And he was the one out of all of them that took the biggest risk financially because he had the most to lose. He was considered the wealthiest man in the colonies at the time, born into a wealthy family in Annapolis, Maryland, was educated in Europe. Yet he came back and he fought against the unjust taxes and was eventually elected as Maryland's four representatives to the Continental Congress for July 4th. He also irritated some Protestants by being elected to that Congress. But,
of course.
Yeah, as expected, But then during the Revolutionary War, he rose to serve on the board of the war. After the War of Independence, he took a seat as a senator in the first federal Congress, as I recall. And interestingly enough, he was the last survivor of those who signed the Declaration of Independence. Some of the other Carrolls that appeared at that time that are related to him was... Father John Carroll. Okay, Father John Carroll, he ministered to Catholic colonists together mm-hmm. with the French and European Catholics joining that cause of the Revolutionary War. Among them were, Pulaski, I remember that, and the Brigadier General at Kosciuszko. Mm-hmm. And Father Carroll was an ardent patriot, and he accompanied his cousin Charles and Benjamin Franklin on their trip to secure Canada's alliance or neutrality in the struggle for independence. After the war there, Father Carroll was appointed the country's first bishop.
That's right.
And he helped the church in America grow. This is interesting, because he earned the respect of the Protestants. And that was a major stepping stone for Catholics, I think, in the United States. They just so admired this this priest, and he was the first to consecrate the country to Our Blessed Mother under the title the Immaculate Conception.
That's right.
So he did so much that we sort of forget about over here.
The legacy, especially with John Carroll, of the America's first bishop. America's first archbishop, establishing the see in Baltimore. And it's also easy to forget that John Carroll's diocese extended essentially across the whole of the eastern seaboard of the United States, so all of the colonies and all of these immense territories, millions of square miles, and he had only a few priests to administer the whole thing. Mm-hmm. So that the work that that entailed, while at the same time we had all of this still rampant anti-Catholicism in the colonies, and then, of course, in this new country. So the story, I think, that when we think about these American patriots, these Catholic patriots, in some ways, what was the incentive for them to help establish this new country when they had lived under such severe anti-Catholicism for so long?
Mm-hmm. it was quite a struggle for them to do that. And fortunately, they did have that place in Philadelphia where they were able to get a good foothold at first before even places like New York and so on, which was certainly not welcoming to any Catholics. It was sort of like a heaven on earth for a while, if we really want to stretch an analogy there for the Catholics in Philadelphia, as they grew in their faith, as the Catholics gathered in that country, and they had two of the important churches there had written about were St. Mary's, where actually the founding fathers actually came and attended the Mass there, Protestant as they were. After the Revolutionary War, they all attended Mass at St. Mary's.
Well, Joe, a fantastic story. I'm looking forward to seeing it in print and online. And thank you for this research, especially as we celebrate the independence of this country on July 4th.
Oh, you're welcome. Happy to do it.
Well, that finishes Register Radio for this week. I'm Matthew Bunsen. On behalf of Jeanette DeMello, remember, for more news, analysis, and commentary, check out the National Catholic Register online at ncregister.com. And for our producer, Jeff Burson, until next week, God bless and take care.